This is Due By Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, watch Fateful Findings.
Hello.
Hello, how are you, Merlin Mann?
I'm very, very well. How are you, Alex Cox?
I'm all right. Max is on his way.
Excellent.
I'm sorry that he wasn't here, everybody. I'm sorry.
Hey, you can't get it every
time. I'm sorry. I know. Oh, we had that long, terrible, terrible episode.
Oh, my God. Welcome to this week's episode of Fishing for Compliments with Alex Cox.
That's the female millennial way, Merlin. I need to be told. I'm very special. You know what? I always thought the special snowflake thing was because, like, everyone thinks they're unique. But then I think I was watching some Nazi YouTube, which is a very, very scary place.
That is going to screw up your recommendations.
Yep. Big time. Oh, I learned that very quickly. I'm like, incognito.
That's almost as bad as life hacks videos.
Yes, oh almost bad. Max is here.
Hey, it's breakout star Max.
Yeah.
And so what'd you learn from Nazi videos?
It's because you melt, because snowflakes melt. There will be a meltdown and you're sensitive.
Oh, I see. It's an analogy that works on so many levels.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Hey, Merlin.
Hey, buddy.
Hello.
Hello.
So the other day in our text thread, I mentioned that I had lunch with a mutual friend of ours. And then you replied back in the text thread. You said, oh, I love that guy. He's a real pistol.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I've been thinking about that for 3 weeks.
Who was it?
Well, I don't want to say. This is everything that happens on the show is the show.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. A pistol. A pistol is somebody who
is... How about this? Wait a minute. You say whether it's good or bad to be a pistol, and then I'll say who it is.
That's part of the nature. Okay, part of the nature of being a pistol is that you're a bit of a pistol. It's a little bit bad. You millenniums. No, okay. It means that you're.
It's like bless your heart. It's like people don't say that when they're really trying to earnestly give a compliment.
I'll pray for you. I think a pistol is somebody who is a little bit mercurial.
I don't know what that means.
Even that word, I'm not entirely sure.
I think it means like a mercenary.
Did you guys go to college in Illinois or something? The thing is, a pistol is somebody who could be a little bit hot, a little bit hard to handle. It's somebody who's a little bit of an X factor. You're not sure what you're going to get. But it's somebody who's often very funny. I use pistol frequently to refer to somebody who's really funny and a little bit of a wild card.
Wild card.
Wild card. Who was it?
It was our friend Jared Spool.
Oh, that guy's a pistol.
While I'm fishing for compliments, what would you call me, Merlin?
Oh, you're a handful. Bless your heart. Oh, bless your heart.
Good job last week. Good episode. I thought it was very funny.
I thought it was great. Alex loved it, too.
Yeah.
There was no Bane voice, though.
There was a little Bane voice.
There was.
Alex shut it down.
Yeah, it's real funny.
She stepped on your balls as soon as you started doing the good bit.
She cucked my Bane.
You guys had a whole bit going about like a sitcom about the Bane family.
Yeah, it was called, what was it? Everybody Loves Bane.
Good news, honey. I've invited the boss over for dinner, and he's coming in 1 hour.
I can't believe you burnt the roast again. Let me go visit with my neighbor, whose eyeballs you see over the top of the fence.
Are you guys watching Project Runway?
Oh, no, boy, am I. I fell asleep during the second one last night, but it was very dramatic. Now, I'm going to take a bold stance. I don't like those twins. I think under your twin theory, those fall very squarely under the category of creepy twins.
And let me answer in the voice of the less hair twin. Indeed. Nobody says indeed.
Indeed,
nobody
indeed.
Talks. She talks the way they talk. It's
well.
It's
if I had to describe this garment, I would call it almost mercurial.
Mercurial. No, it's like they went to a really nice community college where they had a thesaurus and stuff. And indeed, nobody talks like that. So this is a show.
You think she's going right click find synonyms in her brain every time she's
right click find synonyms. She should have gone home. Is what she should have gone. They send home cha cha. Cha-cha, I could have had a whole season of saying cha-cha, and it makes me happy.
This is like on The Bachelorette, how Waboom stayed around for like 6 episodes. Clearly the producers stepped in and were like, listen, keep the twins.
I totally called it.
Because who gives a shit what happens in the first 5 weeks of Project Runway, right? Because it's all ding-a-ling circus. It's the three ring, ring ding-a-ling circus for the first 5 to 6 weeks of Project Runway. Anyway,
remember that lady that used to like
just keep the entertaining ones around, right?
That lady who'd spit on her clothes and rub it on the grass and like, oh come on, you got to keep her around for a few weeks because she's a pistol. Okay, so this is a show. This is a program that for us has much lore and ritual around it and a fair amount of audience participation. And can I give you one thing you'll never unhear? Well, actually,
please.
Technically, two
indeed,
things.
Indeed,
indeed. They come cheek to jowl. The one is when Heidi comes out and goes, hello. But then the sound of everyone responding as one is this. She goes, hello. And they go, and you cannot hear it. And start doing it along with them. It's so fun. And if it's somebody who has a name, please welcome Melanie Johnson. Melanie. It sounds like they got hit with a very fancy sock full of pennies.
Hello.
16 designers. Oh, my God. So much ritual and lore. I think it's going to be a good season. It's going to be a good, good season. Okay. I got one beef. I got beef with the latest episode, though. No way was that stuff actually trash. What is the last time you saw so much pink, yellow, and green trash? And who throws out that much perfectly good vinyl in bolts? Give me a break.
No, they had a scavenger hunt activity in a
near
recycling
trash
facility with materials that the producers brought in for them to scavenge.
Absolutely. Somebody threw out a lot of confetti.
But it did smell bad. They did make a comment of like, oh, that when they got into the workroom, like, oh, or Tim was like, good heavens, it stinks in here.
Why is everyone vain?
Listen, I have one voice. Wait till I do my Sebastian Gorka voice. That's Bane too.
Oh, I'm so excited for Gork follow up.
Sebastian Gorka follow up from the Federalist from Molly Hemingway.
Excuse me.
From Molly Hemingway. She got an exclusive for the Federalist. Okay, so you know the Vice documentary that we watched, the mm-hmm. very scary neo-Nazi documentary where it followed the bald guy who cried later. When they were interviewing him in his hotel room and he was pulling all his guns out of his pants, like a bit from a Matrix movie.
Yeah, he had like a clown
in the background on his laptop. He was reading the Federalist.
Yep, it's in the background. You can see it.
Okay, so anyway, this is Molly Hemingway, an exclusive for the Federal. She got the exclusive on Sebastian Gorka resigning from the White House. From the Federalist, Sebastian Gorka is resigning his post as deputy assistant to President Trump. Multiple sources familiar with the situation have told the Federalist. In a blunt resignation letter.
Five of those sources, Sebastian Gorka.
Well, that may come into play in a moment. In a blunt resignation letter, the national security and counterterrorism expert expressed dissatisfaction with the current state of the Trump administration. Now, Sebastian Gorka, I'm perilously close to just stealing a bit from my boys at Chapo here, but because they have James Adomian comes on and does an amazing, a fucking frighteningly and hilariously accurate Sebastian Gorka impersonation.
I think there's another voice you could implement at this point that would be close enough.
But here's the thing. When Sebastian Gorka talks, he's gradually becoming more... This is Chapo territory. I don't know. This is not my joke. But when he talks, he does sound more and more like a supervillain. So I think I can't really do his voice, so I'll just read it as Bane, because he does... when he speaks, he does sound like a supervillain from a Batman comic. So, so this is from his, what Molly Hemingway calls his blunt resignation letter. This is a quote from Sebastian Gorka. Quote,
given recent events, it is clear to me that forces that do not support the MAGA promise are, for now, ascendant within the White House, Gorka wrote. Quote, as a result, the best and most effective way that I can support you, Mr. President, is from outside the People's House.
Gorka's tenure at the White House was marked by unusually vociferous attacks against him and his family by left-leaning media organizations and the Democratic Party, which... Does anyone remember the Democratic Party attacking Sebastian Gorka? We all remember those high-profile Democratic Party ads attacking Sebastian Gorka, right?
Oh, every time you turn on the TV, there's another one, another Gorka hit piece.
Great messaging by the Democratic Party going after Sebastian Gorka. She goes on, this includes personal attacks against his wife, mother, and son. Those personal attacks were that he belonged to the Hungarian Fascist Party and wore their medal.
What?
Yeah. We read this. This is follow-up from the show. We read this. Sebastian Gorka wore a medal from the Hungarian Nazi Party. Yeah, he belongs...
He's even got that letter. He added a letter to his name to show people he's a Nazi.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the article ends with this. Update. In response to this story, an anonymous White House official reportedly said, quote, Sebastian Gorka did not resign, but I can confirm that he no longer works at the White House.
That is harsh. That is so harsh.
So he did the Trump thing where he was fired, and then he goes... I'm not breaking up with you. You know, you can't dump me. I'm dumping you.
No tag backs.
Oh, he's such a fucking super villain.
Oopsie doopsie. I'm stealing that from another podcast now. You know, actually, what's his name? John Lovett. He does a pretty good Gorka, too. It's a lot like how you're going to, like, you get a Rich Little versus a John Biner. You get an impersonation versus an impression. I enjoy them all very much.
Well, I think I've heard it said that one of the issues with Trump is that nobody can do a Trump impression. Everybody does a Trump impersonation. Or is it the other way around?
I forget.
Basically, like the way that Alec Baldwin, who's like the best at this, right? He's not making a caricature or a commentary on Trump. He's just acting like Trump, right? And it's actually a problem. Like Bush and Obama and George H.W. Bush was like, his reputation was like severely hurt by like a very good caricature that SNL did. Yeah, the Dana Carvey one, right? Like, people remember that, like William Shatner, right? Like, people don't remember actual William Shatner from Star Trek. They remember, like, parodies of William Shatner from Star Trek. There's no equivalent for Trump. Like, no one can caricaturize him.
Right. I'm a fan, as Alex knows, I'm a fan of John DiDomenico's Trump. He does a very good
But that's
very
just an
Trump.
Accurate impression. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Whereas whatever the opposite of that one is, the one Dana Carvey did is, like, making it bigger than the character.
Now, the one that I think maybe comes close is the Peter Serafinowicz, it's like the gay Trump.
Sassy
that
Trump.
He does. Sassy Trump.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it is a little homophobic. Doing Trump in a gay voice. Man. It is a little homophobic.
He gets the mouth noises, though. My favorite part is the...
Yeah.
I kind of insert those when I'm watching him talk. Yes, and apparently another great mystery is exactly what Sebastian V. Gorka actually Dr. Sebastian V. Gorka, exactly what he...
Well, he has a fake PhD, so...
Well, apparently fake his Dr. Thesis was not stellar, but the, it's like what he did as a job
so,
in the White
so
House.
So he never got security clearance. He never got security clearance. There was an incident, he had some sort of... incident with the FAA. I think he tried to bring a gun through the airport. And as a result of that, he never got security clearance. So all he ever did was, he was like a media figure, and he would go on and say, soon Donald Trump will say the true name of the terrorists. He'll call them radical Islamic terrorists, and they will submit to his awesome power.
I channeled you this weekend when he had been interviewed and said something like,
it's like that scene at the end of Star Wars, where it says, if you knock me down, I'll only become more powerful.
And of course, political Twitter's reaction was,
so that's not actually the end of Star Wars.
Instead of realizing that he was saying straight up, no, we're going to destroy everything. And they're like, I don't really don't know about that. Have you actually read the book? It's like, no, he's telling you with his Gorka mouth words that things are going to be bad. And you're just sitting there, looking stuff up in an almanac.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's going to go, you think he's going to disappear from, like, CNN
Nobody
and the media?
Disappears.
Like, no, same with Bannon, right? They're all just going to do their evil deeds, but now they'll just be paid, like, directly by rich financiers of the Republican Party instead of being on the taxpayer dime.
Well, you know how it became an artful thing? I like to think I'm pretty good at this. I can do a pretty good fake Trump tweet because his style is so, I mean, he really has a style of his own, and there's three parts to every tweet that he does, and you can very easily mimic his style. The thing is, though, now having heard or read transcripts of things Steve Bannon says, you can tell when he's the leaker. If you go back and look at stuff, the kind of stuff that only Steve Bannon says in the way that he's saying it, he has a very distinctive style. And I think that's going to be interesting in the criminology of this over the next year, is getting more and more like, oh, I'm pretty sure that was a Jared. Or, oh, you know, that was probably a Bannon. Because you really get these people's style. And as more of that stuff goes on the record one way or another, I think it's going to become clearer, you know, who the leakers are.
Well, Merlin, you know what I've always said is every great Trump tweet consists of three parts or acts. The first part is called the pledge. Donald Trump shows you something ordinary, a deck of cards, a bird, a man. He shows you this object. Perhaps he asks you to inspect to see if it is indeed real, unaltered, normal. But of course, it probably isn't.
You're always
the second
this.
Act is called the turn. Now, this is where Donald Trump takes something ordinary and makes it do something extraordinary. Now you're looking for the secret, but you won't find it because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to know. You want to be fooled, but you wouldn't clap yet because making something disappear isn't enough. You have to bring it back. That's why every Trump tweet has a third act, the hardest part, the part that we call sad exclamation point.
I'm not going to bury another Batman. She was only 15 years old.
Here are the cigars and the brandy.
Take a follow up. I got some very nice listener feedback on my. Remember, I was complaining a couple weeks ago about Apple Wallet and how every goddamn time I take my phone out of my pocket, I accidentally go into wallet mode, and then I try to tap to get my fingerprint, but it just brings the cards back up, and I'm like, tap, tap, god damn it, tap, 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 god damn it, and I have to do that for a half hour. Someone said, okay, check this out. You can just go into the settings and disable that, like, double tap for Apple Wallet, and then if you actually want to bring your cards up, you just hold your phone up to a what do you call that thing?
NFC.
Our NFC reader, and it just brings them up.
That is so badass.
Did you know that?
I saw the person tweet at you about that, and I think I thanked them for it. I'm going to try that. You know what else is great coming in iOS 11? I mentioned this somewhere else, but it's been reported that in iOS 11, you know, there's the SOS where you go tap, 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 tap. You hit five times really fast. And did we talk about this already? We didn't talk about this, did we?
But we did not.
If you hit five times real fast right now on your phone, if you've set up stuff like your organ donation, your emergency stuff, 911, all of that, it's pretty cool. Nice one for you to know when you're going through TSA or whatnot. Tap, 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 in iOS 11, five taps. If you hit cancel, it shuts off Touch ID till the next time.
Oh, for your OPSEC.
Isn't that good OPSEC?
Yeah, you can't be compelled to. Yes. So, like, basically, law enforcement can compel you to put your fingerprint on the phone to unlock it, but they can't compel you to put your code in. That's what the courts have said, anyway.
It's good for lots of stuff, though. I mean, even if you're just somewhere it feels a little bit sketchy, you might want to do that.
Yeah, when I go to protests and stuff, I turn off the Touch ID just in case I'm detained.
You go to protests and stuff?
Oh, big time.
Good for you. I'm scared. Antifa!
That was a very good tweet. Can you play that whole thing?
I'll
find it.
His entire horrifying
70-minute meltdown.
Oh god!
No, hang on. I'll find it. There was a very someone made a very good video edit of the Antifa bit.
Like, I knew exactly where it was going, but it's still so good.
It's a good amount of time that they did for the lead up. So that's by Chris Stevens, MD, on Twitter. It's a very good amount of time leading up to it. It really sells it when it happens.
Lately, I've been, I think we all do the ritual of going on Twitter late at night and then early in the morning to see what horrible events have transpired the night before. But it feels like, am I not looking at the right political Twitter? It feels like Taylor Swift is the only thing that's happening right now. And it's like too quiet. It's making me anxious.
This today, as we record this on Monday, the diggity 28th, it's been kind of a big day. But we also got the hurricane stuff going on, the floods, which are just, oh my God.
I don't know what to say about that. I mean, there's lots of people on Twitter who are like, don't do disaster tourism and just like retweet pictures of it. Like, here's links to get involved. So I guess go do those. I don't know. It seems bad.
Yeah, it's funny that all the warnings against disaster tourism are by newscasters in slickers, like screaming by the beach. It's like, don't come down here just to go eyeball everything. Like, let me do it for you. No, it's a horrible tragedy. There's nothing funny about it. It's just the worst. It's the worst. Taylor Swift, I don't love that song, but I don't have that song.
Can someone explain to me? The amount that I don't know about any of this is incredible. So I know that there was some Taylor Swift news. If I'm being completely honest, I don't 100% know who Taylor Swift is.
Yeah.
I know she had some feud with Kanye.
Oh, yeah. And many a feud.
I know she's not Miley Cyrus, right?
No.
Different one?
No, they share the same name, actually. Miley Cyrus and Taylor Swift. They are indeed the same person.
So I actually don't know anything about Taylor Swift. I don't think I've ever heard a song of hers. Did she do Party in the USA?
No,
that is Miley Cyrus. Yeah. Yes.
No, did she do Bang Bang or what? Or that song?
I don't
Bang
know Bang. What that is.
I don't know. Bang. Okay. What's a Taylor Swift song?
Shake It Off is a well-known song.
Yep. Blank Space.
Trouble when you walked in.
And now what's the new thing? She made an album and everyone's mad?
It was just a very bad song, and the music video was even worse, and it like
she looked
ripped
weird
off.
In it. She looked strange.
Yeah, it was so strange. In the office this morning, a lot of GIFs were being made of the weird part where she like there's like weird cuts where she goes to pick up a teacup and then it's just not right. And then she ripped off Beyonce and a bunch of award stuff.
Boy, now you're gonna get email.
That's fine. Come at me. Mm. Yeah.
Who cares?
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
No. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead, Merlin. I want to hear
anything about Beyonce as long as you're here. You're gonna come at the queen?
Wait.
These people here's the thing. Be careful when you say anything about something where there are many, many strong boosters and many, many strong detractors, because you're gonna get it from both sides.
I really, really like Beyonce, and I will stand by that statement. I saw the first half of Rick and Morty, and then Hulu decided it wouldn't let me watch the rest. Oh, so I don't know why.
Good. So fucking good.
Just the opening, like the cold open of that. Oh my God.
It was so good. Did you watch it all, Merlin?
I watched some of the first episode. Yeah.
Some of the first episode. It's 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long time.
Now, you watched this shitty movie that you made us watch, and you've seen that how many times?
You mean all the way through?
Mm-hmm.
Three.
But you haven't seen Rick and Morty, even the pilot?
I've seen all three Back to the Future movies. I know the show.
Oh my God.
How's it feel, Max? How's that feel? Does that feel good? You like that feeling? You like that feeling when somebody deliberately misunderstands something?
I don't like watching bad things.
Isn't bad, though.
It's not bad.
Okay. It's magic. Okay. It moved over. Okay. It did a wraparound.
We all know that. What was it called?
Huh? Huh?
Neil Breen?
He's ripped like lettuce.
It was bad. I don't like watching bad things. We all know that it was bad. Can we not be coy about it? It's a bad movie, and we're supposed to watch it and shit all over it.
No,
and
The Room
feel
is a
good
bad
about
movie.
Ourselves.
This is a special thing. This was,
but The Room
special.
Is earn. The Room is earnest. I've seen The Room in theaters and thrown spoons at the wall and whatever. Mm-hmm. And at least The Room is earnest, right? Mm. Like, what's crazy about The Room is that this absolutely deranged guy is giving it his all, and it's kind of beautiful because he's trying. It's kind of beautiful because it's bad, but it's earnest. I mean, what else can you say? It's like you're watching a guy run into a brick wall at full speed, and you got to give it up. You got to give it up to him. At least he's running at full speed. It's like at least it's something to root for him in a weird way.
Candles. He's got some ladies in there. Got a football. It's a good
but
movie.
you're kind of rooting for him in a way, just because you could tell he believes in it so hard and he's trying so hard. I didn't know what the fuck was going on in this movie. I didn't watch the whole thing. I gave up on
show.
It. But it's,
save it for the show.
What is this? This is the show. We're doing it.
Dugga. Dateline next door. Update to the update. You remember last week on the show, neighbor Yuri asked, is it bad? Are people who steal lemons bad people? And there have been many, many updates. Let's see here. Here's one. I want to get to this one. This is neighbor. Let's see. Neighbor Raphael says, if the fruit on the tree crosses the property lines, like a fence onto the public sidewalk, I'd venture and say probably not illegal. If they come into your property to grab fruits or flowers from the plant, I'd say it's theft. Labeling them as illegals isn't very PC. Talking about a guy who used to use a wheelbarrow full of fruit. And then we've got the same neighbor Raphael, a little later, says the following. Foraging is illegal in many states. Theft is a perceived experience. This bike was left alone. Finders keepers. For a civilized society, we're far from being civil. Let's just call people names and judge. And while we're at it, let's give up on rules and rights. I'm for controlled anarchy. Think about it before you respond. 8 dots exactly.
This was, I think, of all of the next door follow-up. Theft is a perceived experience.
Theft is a perceived experience title. Oh, wow. So, okay, can you help me just unpack that a little bit? What is neighbor Raphael saying? Is this sarcasm inside sarcasm?
I think he's being extremely sincere. I would say this is a young man who spends a lot of time on, like he's an earnest young man who isn't like trolling boards, but is he's engaged with the neighborhood in a weird way.
You can go
thoughts.
And click and then look at what people have said in other places.
Oh,
well, this is a good one. Neighbor Paul writes in to say sirens, then helicopters, period. First, lots of sirens. Then a low-flying helicopter over the dingle. It was practically overhead moments ago at Dingle and Dingle. What the hell is going on? I started having Desert Storm flashbacks.
What?
And then let's see what he has to say in this one. Okay, here we go. This might give you a little bit of pepper for your onion. Neighbor Raphael writes in to say, I also agree that we may have to start a neighborhood watch team. How do we go about that? And then he spins a tail.
Wait, regarding the lemons?
No. Now we're back to sirens, then helicopters is a new one.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. And so he has a very, very long post here. Let's see. I grew up in Miami, and we had a watch group that consisted of many of our neighbors, had far less aggravated crimes, towns within the county of Miami-Dade. Then he encourages the feeling of community. You'd be surprised how quickly things get done when there are witnesses and signage that the people are watching out for crimes and that those that commit them. We can't put it all on the shoulders of the police departments. I'm in. I have a newborn now, and I'd be destroyed if anything happened to him or my wife. Love thy neighbor, and they will do the same. This is a different Raphael.
Oh, okay. Because that doesn't sound like controlled anarchy. Mm,
exactly. Right. Indeed.
I'm a witness.
I'm a witness. Hey!
Eventually, all of these, the logical conclusion of all of these, like, next door groups is that they're going to, people are going to organize like these, like a neighborhood watch, a combo neighborhood watch militia groups.
Posse Comitatus.
And they're all going to elect like a constitutional sheriff, like Joe Arpaio or David Clark. Like you'll just have one in every neighborhood that the paranoid neighbors are like, we have got to put an end to this lemon theft.
Every neighborhood's going to have their own Immortan Joe.
Yeah. What do you guys know about this Joe Arpaio figure?
I've been following him for a while. He's running.
He's running a concentration camp.
Am I right? Up here. It is now speculated that he's going to, as they say, primary Jeff Flake is the speculation. But the thing is, this guy's pulled out short a lot of times. He likes to say a lot of things. He's been claiming he's going to run for governor since Christ was a corporal, so I'm not sure how much you put into
the thing. Yeah. Did you guys see there was this great Twitter thread from the Phoenix New Times,
so
and they
good.
Were like,
yes.
so and they were like, we've been covering Arpaio for 20 years, and here's a list of the things about him. Now, they eventually got him. You know, they took Arpaio down like the government got Al Capone on tax evasion, where it's like they just found a thing that they could prosecute, and they got him, and that's what he was pardoned for. There seems to be a good amount of dirt where it's like, well, if he ever seriously launches like a more prominent political career, like they'll nail him on some of this stuff. But I don't know. I think the scariest thing here is I do think there's a signal that Trump is saying, you know, did you see this, the speech he gave to like law enforcement a couple weeks ago where he's like, you people, you're wonderful people. Whenever you put these criminals into the back of the car, you always cover their head. Like, you don't want them to bang their head. Right. Stop doing that. Like, I like the old days when we didn't used to cover their head. So he's basically telling the cops, like, go ahead and bang up the protesters, like, or criminals, right? So smash their head on the car when you put them in.
Yeah.
And it's like, isn't the pardon, like, a little bit communicating? Like, hey, go ahead and do whatever the fuck you want, and I'll pardon you.
Sure, yeah, like it's
it.
Horrific.
The same way he tells his, like, violent mob base, like, you should beat up these protesters and I'll pay for your legal fees.
The thing about him is, one of the things about the president is that he doesn't spend money. I don't think he's ever spent his own money on much of anything. So, you know, in that case, I mean, has he ever paid the legal expenses of somebody who's done something on his behalf? I doubt it. It's just everything that comes out is just going to be something for the base.
Well, there's stories out there, like, you can find online of, like, oh, Trump, like, in his limo, he passed some, like, family and they had a flat tire on the side of the road. And then he
gave them an electoral map.
He stopped and he helped them. And then, like, a month later, they got a check for, like, $1 million or whatever. And it turns out that all that stuff is fake. And it was all placed in the press by Trump himself. And he would call as his, like, fake personas.
John Barron.
Like, you know, yeah, right,
John,
exactly.
John Barron, who happens to have the same name of his future child.
That's a good name. You don't waste a good name like that, Baron.
Yeah.
Anyway, my favorite Joe Arpaio thing that I learned is that one time he orchestrated an assassination attempt against himself.
Oh yeah.
And framed someone.
It's part of this larger thing of, like, how much he has cost in terms of lawsuits and settling lawsuits. Do you want to describe the almost impossible to describe situation that he created there? Because it's pretty
well. The figure I saw from the Phoenix New Times was that he's cost them $44 million just in racial profiling cases.
But, tell me if I understand this correctly. He wanted, I guess, a little goose, and so he hired someone to pretend to try to kill him, but then also actually take the fall for it. Wasn't that how it worked?
I don't know the exact details of it, but I think he definitely did try. Here, let's see here. He definitely did try to frame someone for this assassination attempt. Let's see. This is from John Dickerson. October 28th, 2008. Taxpayers spent $1,100,000 this year to settle another of Sheriff Joe Arpaio's lawsuits, the New Times has learned through public records requests. The suit was brought by a man who Arpaio framed in 1999 in a staged murder plot against the sheriff. The payout 9 years after the wrongful arrest is an indication that the aging lawman's publicity-driven unsavory antics may keep costing taxpayers big money well into the future. The county is already struggling with a huge budget deficit and the excessive cost of Arpaio's occupation, or excuse me, the excessive cost of Arpaio's operation isn't helping matters. In 2004, victim James Saville's family sued Arpaio for $10 million after Saville was found not guilty of attempting to kill the sheriff. The county recently settled with Saville for an undisclosed amount.
How does he not come forward at any point and say, hey, there's been a mix-up here. Ha-ha, we all had our fun. I mean, how do you stay quiet that whole time? That's so strange.
I mean,
I think he might not be a good person.
Are you sure you want to backtrack on that, Merlin?
I'm on the fence.
All right.
Did somebody want to talk about the branding on Charmin toilet paper?
Oh,
Big Doug.
I was, you know, we just last week we talked about the whole
undercarriage.
Yeah,
issues.
The yeah. undercarriage talk, and I can't stop thinking about your whole back and forth wipe situation. But anyway, I recently purchased more toilet paper, and instead of, you know, the pleasant
now,
like,
Alex, what
flower
do you, what,
indents.
Now you have two main keywords that you can pick between in the toilet paper aisle. You can pick between your soft and your strong.
Oh, soft. Always soft.
Oh, you're
always soft.
And Merlin, what do you go with?
I like sturdy. I like a combination of both. I get a high-end Cantonelle.
Yeah. Okay. You're both fools. It has to be strong.
Why?
It has to be strong. But, go on. Finish your story.
Okay.
And we'll talk.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just noticed that instead of, like, the little pleasant flower indents, now all the Charmin toilet paper says Charmin on it. And
Charmin.
I was just really upset. It's, oh, God.
No, I don't
it's
like that. I don't like
seeing
that at all.
Samsung and LG on stuff. Ooh, no. I need to know what's...
What is that for? Is that so when you're like, when you wipe your ass, you like read it like Braille? Like, oh, the Charmin logo.
Mm, I'd be fine if there was like some little bears or something. Aww. But yeah,
I think I get. I think we've got the Sweet Home one. We get Cottonelle Ultra Comfort Care Family Roll Toilet Paper Bath Tissue 36 Toilet Paper Rolls Cottonelle.
How did you recall that so quickly? Where did that information come from?
Oh, it's just all up here. It's like a mind palace.
You just looked that up on some sort of. Clean you went to nipple. Hashtag RunX, went under T for toilet paper.
Yeah, well, what I do is I pipe it through Todoist, and then I have a script that sets off a hazel on my Newton. And then a ball goes down a
bing,
slide.
Bing, bing, bong, bing, bong, bing, 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 bing.
It knocks over a glass of milk. A child comes over and laps it up. Then I pipe that through my shell script. Clean ripple, says the Cottonelle. Copy image.
Oh, God,
now,
this sweet homepage.
Do you guys ever have blowout when you're wiping?
Yeah.
So here's the situation. If you get the soft and not the strong, you're wiping and you have blowout. Your hand goes right through the toilet paper.
Yeah.
You can't
have
that.
You're talking about splatter.
No, well, it's a adjacent problem to splatter, but it's its own thing. Blowout.
Well, this is Ultra Comfort Care. Nope. It's a two ply. It's a two ply, and it's pretty strong. I'm not much of a blower, but I can't say anymore. Cottonelle.
I like to get in there. Listen, I like to get in there like a NASCAR pit crew. Like I do not want to waste a lot of time when it actually comes time efficient.
Yeah.
Now I'll sit in there and. You know, I'll read an entire Dostoevsky novel while I'm sitting on the toilet. Like, I'm not, you know, I'll stay in there all day.
You're a patient.
If I can avoid the demands of my real life. But when I'm actually wiping, I want my whole crew standing by with drills in hands, ready to like switch out the tires, wash the windows, and I hit the racetrack. So I move very fast and efficient. There's no wasted actions. It's a very clean mechanical process, and I do not want blowout.
Yeah. So what's your preference then? You get sturdy,
strong
like bull.
Strong. Yeah.
Huh. You don't need no clean ripples.
No. And here's the other thing: is I go to the Costco and I buy 600 rolls of toilet paper, and then I just have toilet paper for 2 years.
That's smart. That's really smart.
Like if you have storage, if you can manage that in your house, like basically, I have like basically shelving in all of our bathrooms where I can just put hundreds of rolls of toilet paper. And it doesn't look awful. It's either hidden behind a cabinet or it's like sort of neatly tessellated on the shelf.
Oh no, you know, I'm not one for the Veblen goods, but I put it all out. I don't care how much toilet paper you see. I want it out there. You see 6 or 8 rolls, you know that I'm a wealthy man. I'm ready for anything.
People come up. I have like, so there's like a whole shelf in our sort of like guest bathroom that's like just filled corner to corner with toilet paper rolls, and people come in and like, wow, that's a lot of toilet paper, what do you have going on here? And I'm like, yeah, make fun all you want until you're at home and you run out of your last toilet paper roll, and now you gotta wipe your ass with a Time magazine. Not gonna happen here.
You walk into somebody's guest bath, right, their disused guest bath, because you got some business to do. Maybe you go down to the rumpus room because you got some stuff you know you need to do, right? And guess what you see sitting there on the shelf, you know? They got some of that healthy for the planet toilet paper.
Oh, bad. Mm.
You know what I mean? They decided to shop green. Oh, I am not looking forward to that.
That's the worst of both cases because it's neither soft and you get blowout.
Yeah.
It's neither soft nor strong. It's like sometimes
this
you get like
a larger
hotel towel.
Seventh generation problem. Like I like their dish liquid, but their toilet is poop. The toilet paper is garbage. Don't get it.
Do you ever go to a hotel and some hotels have gone? Oh, they've opted fully for the soft towel, so they have like the softest towels known to man. It's like
I don't
a
want
cloud
a soft towel.
Of a towel.
I want an absorbent
but it
towel.
Does not. But it doesn't absorb any water. Mm-hmm. It's just you're equally wet before and after you use the towel.
God, yes.
Not one. It repels water.
it's like trying to dry yourself
with a trash bag.
Cloth. Yes.
Yeah.
No. We buy hotel towels.
Who gives a shit how soft the towel is? The point it should dry you.
No. It should hurt a little bit. That's how you know it's working. That's like when you got to get in there and do your pit crew. No, we get those, but the longer you wash them, like the better they get. They get less soft and they get more absorbent, and you've got to really get in there.
Is this science? Is that how it works? Okay, both of you are adult men. You can afford nice soft towels. Why hard? I am very confused.
Soft is not absorbent. Soft is soft.
No, you can get. I'm living my life wrong, I guess. I don't... Oh,
get
God,
yourself some hotel so quality sad. Turkish towels. You wash them and wash them and wash them. And it's like gold toe socks. You just keep buying them and replacing the old ones.
Okay, so sweet home towels, is this going to be as upsetting as the...
I have those. They're fine. They're good. They're very absorbent.
They look very soft.
They're fine. They're plenty soft. But soft, all I'm saying here is softness is not the number one thing in a towel.
Oh, no.
It's a distant number two.
Oh, okay. God. Field-crushed luxury.
Are either of you bathrobe people?
I have a bathrobe. I don't wear it much. I'm a sweatpants guy.
Yeah, I don't know when I would wear a bathrobe. I have one, and I don't wear it very much.
I'm not a swinger.
Well, you both take a lot of baths. I don't know.
Wow. Wow.
What?
The projection is off the charts here. You have so many flaws, Alex, and you go and you pick. You get in there and you pick. A bath is a nice thing. You go make some Alex soup. You know how delicious that could be?
Oh, God.
A little bit of Cox chowder.
Oh God. I'm so glad I haven't eaten food today. Like, my bile has just gone up all up into my throat now. Oh, wow.
Oh, Merlin, yeah. You got a big guest appearance on Upgrade FM.
Upgrade, the silly season.
Upgrade.
Wait, I had a guest appearance on Upgrade.
It was discussed.
No, I didn't see it. I didn't see it on Twitter.
Wait, what was discussed? Hmm. Oh, no.
Yeah, it was discussed. Your guest ships on various things were discussed.
Oh, all right.
Oh, God.
I like that, Jason. I like that Jason Snell. It's a controversial opinion. Yeah. I'm going to come up pro.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. See, he's going to hear from both sides.
Yeah.
He's very right. good. Yeah, it's a lot of sides.
He types very fast.
He's very good on the talk show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I haven't listened yet.
He's an all-timer talk show
guest.
Well,
let's not go crazy. Did they talk about actual Oreos on the show?
Yes. I was shocked. That was very, very, I've never had Numinos.
This is also timely. There's also breaking news not breaking news. It's an old, but there's a really good Planet Money, in their summer of reruns about, the guy who, wanted to bring back Hydrox.
The Hydrox.
What's Hydrox?
Oreos is a knockoff of another cookie called Hydrox.
This sounds like a Marvel villain. That's not pleasing packaging.
Get into my creamy center.
But it was really good. It's about this guy. I guess he made lots of money doing something. I like Planet Money. That's a very good podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Still. And so he decided he wanted to bring back the brand. I haven't finished listening to it yet, but the beginning of it was very good.
Oh, do you guys ever go to a restaurant and you like take a bunch of friends and you sit down and the person, the server comes over to the table and they're like, is this everyone's first time? Have you all dined here before?
Oh, God.
And I fucking freeze. I panic. And I have like a, and I lock up. Because
Because it could go either way.
Here's the math. No, okay. Number one, I've been there before, and I don't want them to think that I'm lame or that I'm like some sort of novice, right?
I want them to know that I'm cool. And singing, and you're expected to join in, like you.
No, listen,
you don't
I
want to
be part of the cool club. I don't want to, you know. Listen,
this is your
yeah,
first time
cool.
dining
we're
with
cool.
us.
We're cool. We're cool. I'm back. Listen, I've been here so often. I'm bringing my friends, right?
Besides, we're sort of family
it's
style.
But it's their first time, so I don't want to deprive them of any of the information of like, you know what? First of all, okay. Let me take a step back. First of all, what the fuck are they going to say? Like, oh, it's a restaurant. It's like you look at the food that you want on the menu.
Exactly.
And then now you don't get all of it. You just pick the things that you
things
want.
Are
and then
a
we bring
bit
that out and you
here.
Pay when you're done.
I think we do it's things like, a little bit differently here. Wear this leather mask. What? All right.
Here's our
guest,
safe word.
You are the gimp. What? Wait a minute. Is it too late to change my reservation?
It's like, I mean, the most information they could ever tell you is it's family style and you're supposed to order a lot of small plates
say.
And share them.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to say it anyway, though. They're not going to ask you.
But here's the other thing is I don't want – now, here's the situation. Sometimes, though, there is information. Like, if I want to know all the information, like, is there some sort of special or, you know what I mean? Like, tell me all the info. So what I want to say is, yes, I've been here before, and I'm cool, and I know how to order off a menu. I'm sort of generally familiar with the principles of how a restaurant operates. But if there's any special information that I should know – that you think I plausibly might not know, despite having dined here before, please just tell me that information. And also, it's my friend's first time, but they also know how a restaurant works, even though they haven't been here before.
Well, but that's tell you a lot bit to
communicate. But that's a lot to communicate.
We have an area in the back with various heated and cooled foods that will be put onto what we call a plate. You will have an opportunity to look at this large piece of paper to let us know what kind of heated and cooled foods you would like us to bring to you. But then you go to a place like you go to a Brazilian steakhouse, and that can be handy. Like, if you've never been, it's going to be super confusing if you don't know about the obrigado.
Don't,
you know what I'm saying?
You know what, though? Honestly, just don't ask me if I've been to there before. If you have some information, like, here's the thing. If you don't know to turn your card over to red, you're going to be bombarded with the meat guys. They're gonna hover like vultures around you, carving meat onto your plate, and you frantically, like Lucille Ball, you're like shoveling it into your mouth faster and faster, but you can never keep up. So if you don't know that, you're fucked. So it's like a critical piece of information that's very costly if you don't understand that. So just tell people every time. Just assume they've never been there before and tell them that information. Right. I don't ask if I've ever been there before. It's so stressful. I should have some sort of card printed up where I can be like, before you ask me if I've dined here before, here's all the information that you need to know.
You want to give him a November, let's call it the November Tango. I'm giving you the November Tango card. We're not going to be speaking. Obrigado.
I know Max loves when we do this, but if you have a tweet length suggestion of how Max can get across all that information in 140 characters, please tweet at Alex Cox. Don't tweet at Max Temkin. He won't read it. But I wonder if...
Let me go through the obvious answers that I don't want to hear. First of all, don't say that it's my first... Don't say it's my first time no matter what, because a lot of times I go into places where I know people who work there or whatever, and I can't really say, yes, it's my first time. Because they'll be like, come on, man, I see you in here all the time.
Now you're already taking the question too seriously, and you seem like you don't have a sense of humor.
Yeah, and then I also don't want to say, because a lot of times I try to bring people to a new restaurant when we go out, right? I want to bring them to my place, right? So it's like, I don't want to say, well, like, what do I say? Like, oh, I've been here many times because I'm cool, but there's new people and they suck, so you have to explain it to them, but don't address it to me. It's like, there's no, it's very
awkward.
That's
what I do. That's what I think the easiest way is to say, like when we go to the Brazilian steak place, which is kind of my favorite restaurant, and if it's just my daughter and me, we always say, oh yeah, we love coming here. So I think you could say something, this is not funny, but you could say something as simple as, oh, I'm a huge fan, but I think there's a couple people here who are here for the first time.
We got a couple first timers here. Mm. Ring the bell. Ding, 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 ding.
Time for the finger banging.
Oh.
Drop those pans, drop those pans. Here comes all your food.
Oh boy, have I been here before. I brought my own gimp mask. Reach into my bag.
You're a bad dog tonight. You're the dog now, man.
Yes, I do want the bacon wraps, please.
You're the dog now, man. I should get an award for that. Okay.
More of the cheesy breads.
Don't fill up on the salad bar. That's how they get you.
Mm. Oh, Mr. Wayne, I see you're going for the salad bar.
I'm sure that this is a bit that someone has done somewhere.
What, Bane orders
stuff over
the
child?
Yeah, classic bit that we all know. I think that's from Mad TV, actually.
How do you prepare your Italian wedding soup?
All right, Doug a dig. So you've both eaten at Olive Garden, I'm going to assume.
Now, Italian wedding soup sometimes takes on the exact appearance and consistency of diarrhea.
Yeah. That's how you know it's working.
No,
you're talking about Jardin
no.
d'Olive? Yes, I have been to Jardin d'Olive.
Okay. In terms of, like, is it truly unlimited breadsticks and salad?
Yes. We went with the whole writer's room. We all did we basically got a private room at the Olive Garden. We got, like, the family room.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
We sat there for, like, 4 hours and did a writer's meeting and ate breadsticks the whole time.
Oh, God.
And we ordered
that's a
wine
dream.
By volume. We just got the biggest
my
bottle of
God.
We were like, what's your best wine?
And did you get Alfredo sauce?
They were like, well, we don't have a best wine, but we have a biggest wine.
That'll do.
And we ate a tremendous amount of breadsticks. We ate hundreds of breadsticks.
They used to. I don't know if this is still available. When I was in college, boy, we would get real silly. We'd go to Jardin d'Olive, and they had a deal where it was unlimited breadsticks and salad for something like $6, and refills on Coke because I think they're owned by Coke. And oh my God, we would get so silly. We would sit there for like 2 hours. More Alfredo sauce. I mean, like, it was bad. It was bad. I felt so bad for the waiters. Like, that sucks.
We got very sick after, almost to a person. Everyone felt very bad when we left.
That's when you're going to want some very strong toilet paper.
Strength. You have to go for strength, not softness.
What do you think, Sebastian Gorka? You see, on the continuum, do you think he goes more? See, I'm thinking it's kind of like a BDSM type situation where he probably wants something very soft because then that's a contrast with his personality. What kind of toilet paper do you think he uses?
Well, he's using those Alex Jones tactical dude wipes.
Oh, of course.
Mm. He's using the tactical sanitation squares, and they're sort of military-grade, pre-moistened, you know, baby wipes.
Finally, proof that Michelle Obama is a man.
Sebastian. Oh, I saw that on Breitbart. That's a wonderful story.
Okay.
I saw that Sebastian Gorka, I'm confident that he uses... dude wipe, you know, flushable wipes every time he wipes his ass. Because what is he? He has no, you know, he's an asshole. All these people are assholes. Yeah. So that, what do they care? They just clog the septic systems. Sure, create a fat burg. What do you care? You don't have to fix it.
Mm. Question. Do you guys think that with the Bannon's big return to Breitbart that we're going to get like a ton of leaks, just like a fatberg of leaks? And will it be interesting or good or help in any way, shape, or form?
No, they're going to do the same bullshit that Breitbart always does. I bet they'll bring back their black crime tab.
Oh,
They actually got less racist when Bannon left. During Bannon's tenure, they used to have a whole tab on their website called Black Crime.
Oh, God. Black Crime. I don't know. No, I think the biggest part of his weird, erratic, disinformation, 17-dimensional chess is I think there's going to be a huge amount of leaking from him. Like, big, big, big. I really do. Because now, the thing is, now he's got scores to settle. And he knows a lot of stuff, or he can make up a lot of stuff. And he knows he is very media savvy in that sense. He knows what people will print and how hungry people are for crazy Trump stories.
Look, what did Bannon do in the White House? He sat in meetings and got drunk and said crazy shit to the media. What is he going to do outside of the White House? He's going to sit in different meetings and get drunk and yell at the media. Like, nothing is going to change. I'll have less access to the president, but I honestly don't even think that's true. I bet I'll have the same amount of access to the president.
Yeah. Oh, Alex. Good link, Alex.
I'll just call him up. What'd you find? I don't have any of the doc or nothing.
There's a no. In our secret secret text channel. Breitbart has a store, and I expected sort of like Alex Jones type products, but no. There's a Steve Bannon.
Hashtag war.
Hashtag war for the fidget spinner.
They didn't even pick a picture of him. He looks like it's like an extra blotchy picture of him.
He looks like Baron Harkonnen.
Blah. Oh,
like he's gonna. That's my first thought. Is he's had a long day. He's gonna go home and drain a boy.
Unfortunately, I've been making meth in my bathtub, so we'll have to put the acid somewhere else.
Leftists need comfort at times like this. Gift them. That's not a verb. Gift them this pacifying. Oh, who writes this? Leftists need comfort at times like this. Gift them this pacifying item that will give them something to do in between pulling down monuments, or keep one for yourself. That's
2 minutes
lighting.
Spin
terrible.
Time.
But don't you see that Breitbart did this so that we would make fun of it, and now we're making fun of it?
Oh, they got us this time.
Oh,
no, I'm
man.
Serious. Why do you think they did this? The whole thesis of Breitbart and Trump is that they're just going to drive libs crazy. And we do need to exercise a little bit of discipline in not being driven crazy by all of their blatant come make fun, we dare you. Like, the whole country, like, listen, Merlin, you've said this many times. Nobody is persuaded by hearing how much of a fucking idiot they are and how bad of a person they are, right?
Yeah.
The right does not want to hear whatever else we can say about whether it's right or not and whether it's moral or not or whatever. The right will never be persuaded by the left saying that they're awful people and they're irredeemable and that they're idiots.
I know, but
the more that we sit here shitting on them, selling that they did this dumb, they made 100 of these fidget spinners, right? They're already sold out, right? So how many did they make? They made 50 of them. They made 50 of these goddamn fidget spinners in China, sold them on their website to get a rise out of us, and now here we are, dutiful dogs, making fun of them on our podcast, and they're getting a rise out of us exactly as they wanted, and we're not engaging. You know, it's like we're not engaging them on any issues. Well,
Sure whether we do or don't talk out about a page on the internet is going to change that much one way or another. What I will tell you is this: I think it's the patterns of what is done, not done, intentionally, not intentionally. The patterns are becoming clearer in how this stuff goes. So maybe we're supposed to get mad about this. I'm not even mad about this. It's more like a little kid, like who it has some kind of like one joke they keep telling over and over, or some kind of a dumb prank that was never really all that funny. It's just, you know, you play along and go, yeah, that's funny. But in this case, like, I feel like there is a lot about their playbook that has gone from being terrifying to a little sad. Where there's some stuff that is absolutely legit terrifying. There's other parts though where you can I feel like you can see the Matrix a little bit with some of this stuff.
I agree that I think we can see the Matrix, and you know that you can see past a little bit of the media spectacle of what happens week to week. But it's also sad that the libs keep kind of falling into the trap over and over. Like the right, the Steve Bannon right, the alt-right,
yeah.
They want to engage on culture war bullshit. They want to argue about whether we should tear down statues. They want to argue. They seek these fights out. They instigate them. They start them. Because here's what they know. They know that the right turns out to vote. They get out of bed to vote on culture war issues. They feel like that they're threatened by Obama, by, you know, whatever civil rights issues or whatever. And these people get out of vote and they vote for the school board and they vote for the sheriff and they vote for Congress because of culture war issues. And the left, we make a big fucking stink on Twitter and we excommunicate people from our communities and we ban people from college campuses. We exercise power in all the places that we hold power to engage on these culture war issues, but we don't vote on them. The left votes on material issues. The left votes on, will your minimum wage get bigger? The left votes on, will we get better health care? So, like, and listen, I'm proposing a thesis of how politics works. And if I wanted to design an experiment to test my thesis, what better experiment could I possibly propose than the last general election, where you had Trump who almost Trump had no serious policy. He only engaged on these dumb chicken shit culture war issues, like we're going to build a wall. Like, we all know that that's fake. It's just a dog whistle for anti-immigrant hysteria, right? All of Trump's nonsense, right, of what he's going to do. Oh, we're going to commit war crimes and go take their oil and win these wars or whatever. Like, it's all nonsense. It's not – he's doing the exact same Afghanistan policy that Obama was doing. It's all trivia and nonsense. But they won the election on these culture war issues, and we played right into their hands. The Clinton campaign played right into their hands. They made the whole election a character referendum on Trump and a debate about these culture issues, and they said, when they go low, we go high, and love Trump's hate and all of that nonsense, and we put up the biggest defense we could against these culture war issues, but we didn't sort of dig in on the substantive things. We never sort of like led by proposing our policy alternatives, and we were never able to capture that story and that momentum on the real issues, and we got our asses whooped. And we're doing the same thing again. We're getting our asses whooped in the midterms. Democrats just sent out an email and they were like, hold Trump accountable on the wall. He didn't build the wall.
Like, we go, you are one of the people that I trust most about politics. You've been doing this since high school. And it's just hard because, like, we're going in circles. We're going to protests. And it's like, what else?
So I don't think protests are going in circles. I think that I think protests are very effective, especially protest. You know that a protest is effective if it disrupts commerce and infrastructure, because that is that is the difference between, okay, protests are bad if they're merely symbolic, right? If people mm-hmm, gather mm-hmm. together and hold up funny signs mm-hmm. and take pictures for Instagram, I mean,
oh God.
I would describe that as more of a rally. And the purpose of rallies in politics is to fire up the base. So even that's not nothing, but I don't know that it necessarily is like a winning strategy. Now, protests can be a winning strategy, and that's when they disrupt infrastructure and commerce, because that crosses the line from a rally into the exercise of power. It's the exercise of mm-hmm. political will, right? You're saying we are powerful, we're putting our bodies in this place, and we can't be denied. The alt-right did that very effectively in Charlottesville, right? They mm-hmm. showed their mm-hmm. numbers, they disrupted commerce and infrastructure, and they were undeniable, and it was very scary And that's a tactic in the Vice documentary they talked about. Yep. The left is really good at this, and we're stealing these tactics from the left. So it is not nothing. Like I think that the strongest protest of the whole Trump administration was the airport protest.
Yes.
When the immigration ban went down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was powerful for a number of reasons, but the most important one was it disrupted commerce and infrastructure, right? People could see, okay, we can't operate these airports if there's all these people's bodies in the way. And it was basically the voice of the people saying, we will shut this thing down. Like, you need to listen to us, or there will be political and economic consequences. That is the exercise of power in politics.
I think I misspoke, because I think what I was referring to is like rallies and the constant, like, we go down to Trump Tower and it feels very empowering, and like, yes, these are the humans. We are putting our bodies between horrible people and marginalized folks. But so much of that is done, you know, in back channels and so that people can stay safe. And one of the most amazing things about the O'Hare protest was like it happened so quickly that all of the organizing seemed to happen in public. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was there was all of the information was shared, like people, or it felt really calculated and organized. It's like, okay, here's what the lawyers are doing. If you don't have a skill that we need right now, here's where we need you to be. And I think I'm just asking, because people give us feedback on this, is like, okay, what do you do if you want to be Antifa? What do you do if you want to join the alt left?
Yeah.
I guess that's the thing, because there are a lot of, especially young people, who they're not like from the grassroots, like they even their parents, like, they didn't understand, they don't know like how to organize, and not that that's anybody's fault, but all they feel like they can do is post on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, posting on Twitter is not in and of itself bad, but I think that a lot of people do it as an they do these symbolic things instead of doing material things. Mm-hmm. And that's bad. Like, doing symbolic things is not just another way of doing material things. It doesn't help. So
Twitter can be useful for stuff like that. It's really most effective as a way to promote your new book about how always on mobile culture is killing us.
Right.
Was this a subcast? Which book is that? I'll cut this out. What book is it?
No, it's okay. There's a guy on political Twitter who's part of the whole like culture. And he's a young guy, but he's part of the whole, like, everybody got dumb when they got cell phones. And he keeps tooting about his stuff and retooting other people's stuff about his stuff. And the hypernormalization starts to kick in. And I go, like, am I losing my mind? Are you really using Twitter that much to promote your thing about how Twitter is bad? I guess it makes perfect sense. I'm the one who's crazy. Jumps out window. You're right. The thing is, it's a little bit like, I don't know, like, are you creating light or are you creating heat? Where it's, I guess I feel like if you've gotten your steam valve released, it can feel like you've done something. Like, if you got a real good sick burn on somebody, that can feel like you've really accomplished something. If I understand what you're saying,
the steam being released
is not helping.
Yeah, I need everybody on Twitter to become like NoFap, right? Because you have to save up your masculine energy. You can't just be spraying it everywhere. You have to save it up so that you fuck.
Now I've got to Google what that means.
Oh, Merlin, welcome to the world of NoFap. Oh. This is a big thing among the Trump people. It's like a big Reddit.
It's a community, Max.
Oh, it's a big. It's a movement. Okay. Now there's a big
not
crossover
too much
on the
movement, though. Yeah.
Where's the bell? There we go. Okay, I now should probably be wrapping up this podcast, but I want to play the scene of the movie that we had to watch that broke my spirit. Can I do that?
Yeah, please.
Okay, hang on.
Dinner will be ready soon. I'm hungry. I can't wait for dinner.
It seems like it never happened. You've got great family genes. still in pain.
The elephants. What about the elephants?
Can I have some wine, please?
Okay.
No. We need to. We need to hear the elephants. Got to hear about the elephants.
I turned it off.
No, that's good. Did you at least see the end? Did you see the end?
No.
Oh my god.
But I have this really interesting project about elephants in Africa.
I'm sure Dylan doesn't want to hear about that now. I want to hear about our project.
But what you can't see is that each one of these is an awkwardly tight shot of a human face talking with live on-set audio, so you can hear whether the air conditioning is in a different part of the room every time somebody talks. Oh, and the corn.
Okay, so I watched 30 minutes of this movie.
You didn't watch the end?
First I said I'm going to watch 15 minutes of this, and that'll be enough to talk about on the podcast. And then I was like, 15 minutes in, he was in the hospital, and there were these long shots of the blinds blowing around, and there was like a ghost. And I was like, what?
I
was like,
I still
don't even know what this plot of this movie is. And then I watched until 20 minutes, and I still didn't know what the plot was. And then I watched until a half hour when this dinner was happening, and I still didn't know what the plot was. And I was like, I can't fucking believe Merlin made this the challenge.
So
I don't know why we watched
this. Okay, you don't have to watch the whole thing, Alex.
Why? Yeah. I mean, I get it. Okay, I get it. It's bad.
It's not bad.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
It's magic.
But it is bad, though.
No.
You don't. Are you being honest? You honestly don't think this is a bad movie?
No. It's definitely not a good movie, but it is so. It is unique in the fact that he was somehow able to competently put that onto even a piece of media and hand it somewhere and have it turn out the way he did. So here's my headcanon, then we can stop because I know we're running long. Mm-hmm. My headcanon is that when, at the beginning of the movie, the girl goes away, a young Neil Breen, young Dylan, goes into a fever state and hallucinates the entire movie about what he thinks it's like to be an adult.
Oh my God!
That goes with my theory because
I was like, do they think that like sex just happens from the waist up? Like, what's happening here?
That explains it all. Yeah.
Would you like to just introduce what the challenge was really quickly?
Oh, the challenge this week falls to me, and I wanted them to watch the 2013 movie Fateful Findings.
This is the real Fateful Findings of podcasts.
And other banks.
I resign as president of the bank.
So what is the plot? What is the plot? He gets hit by a car, and then it's sort of a family drama, and then he's a hacker?
And a novelist.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to the part where he's a productivity guru, and then he just throws books everywhere?
Did you get to the one where he has two different therapists, and one of them disappears?
Man.
No, literally on screen. He has two different therapists, one of which he goes to in a boardroom, and the other one they sit on folding chairs with their knees touching.
Man, if I could see my therapist where we're in a boardroom and we get to, I would love to sit way, 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 way far away. Max, here's the thing. Any question you have about this movie, it's probably, we can answer with, I don't know.
The wizard did
maybe.
It. Yeah. Oh, but when the paintings shake and the mirror, oh my God, and the black shoes and the door. More shoes and the shoes and then the blood by the shoes.
Why,
and the blood
what
and the
do
shoes
you
are
like?
Gone.
What so I can say so I like The Room and I've told people you should check out The Room.
Yeah.
What I like about it is that it's a singularly insane movie in the way that it was filmed and the story that's put together on screen.
It's got heart though. It's got heart.
But but the guy Tommy Wiseau, he's trying so. I mean, this is it. His entire life has led up to him making this movie.
Yeah.
And there is something innocent and that you can root for in the film. I genuinely get a good feeling in my heart when I watch The Room because I'm like, this guy's trying as hard as I've ever tried on anything in my life to make this movie, and he's pouring his soul out on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's bad, but there's something joyful that I like about it anyway. And that's, I think, kind of what explains the like enduring fan cult around The Room. I just don't get it for this movie.
I understand. You're forgiven.
The thing with The Room is, though, like, it... I became obsessed with this movie so, like, it was so hard and fast, and, like, I want to go home and watch it again. The Room was like, okay, this is really fun. This was a fun thing in college. And it wasn't until what was the one book that came out? Oh, The Disaster Artist. And like Tommy Wiseau started making more public appearances, and you sort of understood the lore of this movie. And then, like, you know, what happened, how hard it was to make, and, you know, just like the crew walking out on him and all that. This movie, it's really hard to find anything about it. Right. It really
is just him.
And the
credits.
the credits. He totally buries the lead,
yep.
and that the like final note in the credit is like anybody with like a B or an N in their name is actually
Neil Breen.
Oh my God!
You know, there's no accounting for taste with these things or lack of taste, but there's something about this. Again, you kill the joke when you try to explain it, but there's something special about this. We're on several different levels. I sometimes feel like even in a given scene, I think I understand what he was going for. It's sometimes, but it doesn't usually land the thing, and it ends up sounding very alien. But then the beauty part is jamming all of these together in a way that has absolutely no continuity, to where, like I said to you guys in the text channel, it really is like at least four different movies, and none of them make any sense. There's no explanation for much of anything. I would put this on the level of an Ed Wood movie. Like, I think this is special. The level of like ambition of like the big ideas that this guy was going for, just what ends up on the screen is just amazing. Like, just you could read any of the things that those people say at the end. And I think he probably felt like this was like a special movie about something. And that's why I say it's almost childlike in a certain way. Like the understanding about how the entire world works is really childlike. Yeah, everybody wants his nut to be popped into them. Like, and everybody in the world is part of a conspiracy. The government is part of the conspiracy. The corporations are part of the conspiracy. And if I could just speak the truth to power with my magic stone, I would get all of these lying people to come forward. It's a fantasy. And like the way that it plays out is just, it's so artless that it's special to me. I'm not a bad movie fan either. I've seen maybe four movies ever on the Flophouse. Maybe. Like
that's.
I know. I have the Cards guys and a lot of my friends. They like love watching bad movies, and they watch all the Mystery Science kind of, you know, canon of movies where they're like, I don't know, that like fucking Santa Claus on Mars shit or whatever. And yeah. I've had to sit through a lot of those because it's what my friends like to do. Is sometimes. Like, hey, let's get high and watch a bad movie and then like laugh at it. And I guess it gives people a feeling of superiority or I don't know. It's not for me. I always feel like it's a tremendous waste of my time, and there's so much good shit out there. Like,
I made you do it. Look, you needed this. You needed this.
I didn't need it though. I haven't seen The Shield, and I understand The Shield to be one of the best TV programs ever. People love it. Like, I'm constantly hearing like, oh, it's like The Shield when I like something. I know I should watch that, but there's a lot of episodes of it, and I don't have any time. And it's like, how could I sit there and watch, you know, Fatal Attraction or whatever. What is it called? Fatal Outcomes? Fatal Findings.
Yep.
How can I sit there and watch Fatal Findings when I haven't seen The Shield?
I know. Look at you. Just look at yourself. Well, I'm glad Alex liked it. We got to find a funny way out. I got to go pick up my kid.
It's okay. Here's what I'm going to say about this thing is like, it's, oh man. Like you said, The Room and all, like, Santa Goes to Mars and stuff like that. Like, they all know that it's, they're trying to tell a story, and, like, you can see what story they're trying to tell. Merlin, I still don't know what story
You don't know what the story was supposed to be.
No, well, I have no idea. And that's what's so fascinating. And, like, I'm watching this with, like, all of, not to go all film student, but, like, knowing just the, like, grammar of cinema and, like, what the fuck is happening? They talked about this on The Flophouse. I'm like, I don't know what is trying to be portrayed on screen. I don't know what, like, any of these motivations are. I have no idea what's happening. None. And that is what was so fascinating and so just... It makes me want to know what's going on man's mind.
I think there is a cottage industry of people who make bad movies so that other people can watch them and be like, I'm watching a bad movie.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, you got like the trauma kind of movies, right?
Sharknado, you know, all that kind of nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
I'll say about this movie, I don't think it's trying to be a bad movie.
No,
I think
not
he's
at
just
all.
Trying to make no. a film. He's making an art movie. It's just awful.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound defensive about this. I don't like to. I We watched The Simpsons last night where they made fun of fat people. And I said, you know what? I think this is really mean. Because that's the kind of thing where I think, you know, that's not a thing we need to do more of. That's a thing we need to do less of. I'm not here to make make fun of the movie per se. I don't get that much thrill out of hate watching anything. I agree on that. I think what makes this different for me, to Alex's point, is just how weird, how unintentionally weird it is. And that even when I think I understand what the thing is supposed to be, I don't know what the thing is supposed to be. I still don't know what the ghost thing is or what the guy with the black shoes is. I still don't know. Maybe Neil did, but like to be inside of somebody else's brain this deeply, like it took time to make this. I think it's fun to just sometimes be unmoored from stuff that you understand that's just merely bad into something that's like, I don't know. I think it's transformative.
Him on the podcast?
No.
Is he gettable?
No. He's an architect. He's an architect. He's very busy.
Yes. He's an architect on the side. I just realized, I think, that the reason I became so obsessed with this so quickly is it's like after I see a documentary and I'm like, okay, how did they do that and why? Like, how did, what was going through their brain? Like, Errol Morris's movie Tabloid, and he's talking to this crazy woman who kidnapped her husband or boyfriend, and you're just thinking, how did he, one, like, get her to say this, and what is she thinking? And it I just want to understand this man's brain. Like, the Room or Piranha or Sharknado, like, people come out and say, like, oh, well, this, we did this because of this, and you know what they're going for. I have no idea. I don't know what the pebble is. The pebble a hard drive? Is the ghost him?
Why did, like, it turn into a mushroom?
It's so and there are plenty of, like, I enjoy the Flophouse, and how did this get made too is kind of good. But this, I don't know. It's like The Prestige.
This movie can suck my balls.
Yay. I and other balls have been sucked with my incompetence.
Smash cut. Indeed.